Hello everyone, welcome back. We had a power outage here in City Hall, so we lost all our power, our Wi-Fi feed, the YouTube stream, and the GoToMeeting was all closed. So we paused our conversation on the three ordinances that are in front of us today, 9A, 9B, and 9C, which is all relating to short-term lodging and the definition of a bed and breakfast. When we last left, Ms. Negron was talking with Ms. Heller a bit about those issues. So I don't know if Ms. Negron, if you want to continue where you were with Ms. Heller.
Thank you, President Waldron. I just wanted to, because I know that that's exactly where we were, got cut off when Darlene was talking, but as long, I believe that what I see in front of me goes along with what the residents were requesting to make it tougher, and I just wanted to make sure that the residents had the opportunity to either see it or to learn that this was going to be on the agenda today, so that they could be part of the conversation. And I know that they will. They're very active and always. Even if they're not watching right now, they will be watching tomorrow or whenever. So we will hear from them sooner or later, I'm sure. I hope. Because according to what I see, is something that I can definitely support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions from members of council? Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
I think when we end, Mr. Callahan has some issues, so he could go first if he wants. I don't know if he hears me.
No, I was waiting for Mr. Waldron to recognize me.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Did you want to add something?
I did. As I said earlier, I'm all for someone having an Airbnb as long as they're not using it as a hotel and they never live there. The percentage of time that they have to live there, I'm all ears for it, you know. So I don't know where everybody else is and what the percentage of time is that someone should be living in their property and using it as an Airbnb. As I told you before, I've rented many Airbnbs in many cities, and I've never had an owner there. So I don't know what the percentage is, but Councilwoman Negron, if you own a property, shouldn't you be allowed to rent, if you're gone for a week or two on vacation, shouldn't you be allowed to rent it out as an Airbnb?
You want me to answer that question, actually? Well, you know, I think that we have, the reason we have zoning in our communities is precisely so we can control what is a neighborhood and what is not, what is meets, what is commercial. And I believe that this should be, we should stick to that. You know, if you have a neighborhood that they, you know, you spend, you know, thousands of dollars fixing up your house, you know, buying it, and you bought it because this is a neighborhood, not a mixed neighborhood. You know, if you are okay with a mixed neighborhood and you're moving there, well, then you got to deal with what you got. But we have zoning areas for reasons, and we need to be respecting them. So, and again, I, more than anything, I need to listen to what the members of that neighborhood want, because it's them, the one they're going to have to deal with people coming in and out. So to me, the answer should come from, you know, is this what they want? And according to what I remember, the conversation was, they wanted it to be stricter. And I mean, Darlene, I asked you, you know, again, that's what you thought it was, and that's what I wanted to make sure. Do they know this change happened, that we're voting on this? And again, I'm sure that sooner or later they will reach out. I will support this the way it is, because it's what the residents in the community in there asked us to do. And if I get a bunch of emails and phone calls saying, no, we didn't see it, we didn't hear about it, we didn't know about this, then I will, you know, talk, because that's my job, to represent whatever it is that they want. So that's my message.
So what percentage should they be allowed to rent out? If you owned a home, what percentage do you think they should be allowed to rent it out, like per year?
I'm not gonna keep continuing this conversation because this has nothing to do with what is in the ordinance that we have in front of us. So, I don't have an answer for your questions because I think that in my mind, whatever the residents in there want, that's what we have to do. And if they don't want any commercials and they don't want anybody renting that unless they live in there, well, then that's what we have to do because they're the residents that have to deal with that over there. If that's not the way it happens in the south side or in the west side, well, they're okay with that, well, then let's be okay with that. I think it's important that we listen to what that community wants.
Should someone be allowed to rent it out for at least a week if they own a home?
Mr. Callahan, I have to jump in and just remind you of council rules and decorum that you're really not supposed to be addressing direct questions to other members of council. They're supposed to go through the chair. I think Ms. Negron has indicated she doesn't really want to have this conversation right now as well. She supports the ordinance as is, and if you want to make an amendment, we can either do that now or we can do that between first and second reading because we do have that opportunity to do so. Or, as Ms. Cranchy Smith has also indicated, we can pass it and then amend it.
Second or third reading, then, please.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walden.
Yeah, Ms. Cranchy Smith, and then Mr. Reynolds indicated you wanted to speak.
Okay. Sorry, thank you. Okay, I guess I'm just trying, I know this is a difficult situation. I'm trying to balance it so that it's as win-win as we can get for everyone. And I agree with Olga, the most important thing is a neighborhood. And I guess I'm wondering, and I know it may be hard to tell us, Darlene, but I'm thinking if we do an amendment and say, okay, the owner occupied at least 75% of the time. And again, I don't know the history of the issue with the one person who I believe is the violator mostly, but I'm thinking if we do that, will that resolve the issue with that particular person? Because then you cannot be living in eight different homes 75% of the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think there's two points that I'd like to make. The first one is that in the current housing ordinance that we have right now, we do have a provision that it might be for 30 days a year, I'm not exactly sure, but we do have a provision that is how many?
It is for 30 days. We have the two types, a 30-day and a shorter stay.
Right, so we have a provision now in the current ordinance that says that if you're traveling or whatever it is, if you don't want to be around when Music Fest is here or if you travel during the holidays, we have a provision now that says that you can rent out your whole house for up to 30 days while you are away. To this point, nobody has registered for that. It may be that they're doing it and not acknowledging it, we just don't know about it, but no one has registered for that at this point in time. So it is in place, it's really not being used. So frankly, we took it out because it wasn't something that the neighbors supported anyway. The other thing I want to mention though is that we really, really struggle with enforcement. It's challenging. It's very, very challenging. So I am not sure how we would know if an owner is there 75% of the time and renting it out for 25%. I just don't know how we would do it. And honestly, Mike and his bureau have spent many, many man hours trying to track down and follow up on complaints related to short-term lodging, and it has been extremely challenging. So we tried to keep that in mind as we tailored a new ordinance so that we would really be streamlining our responsibilities for enforcement. It's very difficult. So I understand what you're saying, and I know that in some touristy communities, like beach communities, people do rent out the whole house, but I think sometimes those are very different communities, and they're made up of homes that have been rented out that way for years, maybe not through Airbnb, but that was occurring in those neighborhoods for years. And in this neighborhood now, it's really a new challenge for us. It's a transition that the neighborhood has not experienced previously. So I think it's different than a beach community or someone going back for a football weekend and bringing their whole family or something like that. I just think it's a very different neighborhood scenario. Although I recognize that is the experience that many people have when they vacation.
And I guess, and I understand the enforcement, I know it's very difficult, but I'm thinking if it's hard to get a handle on that somebody's going to be there 75% of the time, would it also be hard to figure out if they're 100% of the time? I mean, it's going to be difficult overall anyway. And again, I feel for the neighborhood. I guess I'm trying to balance both. I think it's important that we don't have these violations, but the flip side is we also have to think about we are a tourist city and people do like to come here, and that does help our economy. So we sort of don't want to give the impression that, you know, we don't want people to come here and use Airbnbs. Because again, most people I know, or everyone I know, wants to use Airbnb when no one's there. Again, since I'm new, I'm not sure if I would ask Mr. Spurt or Darlene, like, for some logistics here as far as possibilities. Can we, first of all, table it for a week for the next council meeting, or can we propose an amendment tonight to make change in the ordinance?
We have the option to table. We have the option to make an amendment tonight on the spot, and we'd also have the option to make an amendment between the first and second reading, where you could present it at the second reading and work with the administration on what that amendment would be. And you alluded to the fact earlier, we have the opportunity to pass this on second reading and then come back with a text amendment after the fact as well. So we have a bunch of options. And there's also the option that we can not pass this as well. Let's not forget that. So, Mr. Spurk, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, just briefly, it was my understanding every time when the administration came forward that their concern was enforcement in general, and the proceedings in court, at county court back in 2018-2019, cast some serious doubt on whether the housing ordinance in place could really be enforced. I think it was the court's opinion, sort of in a footnote and a hint, that what you're really doing here and what you're all talking about is regulating use. How's the person going to use their land? How are they going to use their property? And that's a zoning thing, more than the housing safety code type thing. And zoning things have very specific requirements in terms of advertising and planning commissions that must be rigorously adhered to. So the difficulty, as I understood it, was that although you have a housing ordinance on the books and there may have been a lot of violations going on, there was a concern in the administration's part that there's nothing you could do about it until we finally got a zoning ordinance in place. So in addition to all the logistical challenges of would you have to re-advertise, would you have to have another hearing, would it have to go back to the planning commission, those things would happen and that would delay enforcement. On the other hand, there's also the practical concerns of do you want to get something on the books now or not? So some legal perspectives for what they're worth.
Mr. Reynolds?
I was just going to add something similar to what Ms. Heller had said, that about no matter if it's a good idea or a bad idea about how setting up a percentage for residency, it just seems like a very, very difficult thing to enforce. And it seems like this whole conversation includes a lot of things that are difficult to enforce, and that might be a little bit of the nature of it. But I just wanted to say that, you know, I think it would be very, very difficult, other than if somebody had multiple properties. But if somebody owns one property and trying to prove how much of their time they're actually living there would probably lead to all sorts of back of the napkin math as far as like, I didn't see Joe for 2 weeks, or Karen wasn't around last month, and that should count as part of her time that's not here. I I mean, like I said, it's not about if that's a good idea or a bad idea. I just think that a lot of times in this conversation, we get into what can be enforced and what can be what can stand up in court. So that was the only thing that I was looking to say on that. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
No, I just want to say, you know, I think we all agree that one of the situations where someone is not living in the home at all and they are buying several homes in the historic district and using them as basically a full-time hotel, I think all of us are, you know, against that. But I don't want to also hamper someone who's a homeowner and goes away for a month vacation in Europe or goes for, you know, 2 weeks down the shore and they want to rent out their unit or their house for the 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks that they're gone on vacation, and there might be someone who's from another part of the country who wants to come in and vacation in our city. I think all of us will agree that Bethlehem is a tourist attraction, whether it's Christmas time or music fest time. A huge percentage of the businesses do very well off of the amount of tourism that our city generates. So, I do not agree with a situation where someone is buying multiple homes and never living there and using it as basically a hotel. That I am totally against. But I'm also in favor of someone who owns a home or a property and they're living there a majority of the time, and they're away from that home or property and they want to generate some funds off it. We live in a digital age, and between Airbnb and Vrbo and Grubhub and all these different new technologies that are popping up all over the place because of the internet and everybody having phones, I don't know. I just think I think if someone is truly living in their home, there has to be an ability for them to rent or lease out their property for a short period of time. Again, what that percentage of time is, I don't know. And I understand an enforcement issue, but if someone is living there and their residency is in the city of Bethlehem, you know, who are we to tell someone you can't lease your house out to someone for a week or 2 weeks while you're on vacation? Using an Airbnb in some other city. Bethlehem is a very progressive city. We always have been, and I think we always will be, and I just hope that we can come up with some type of solution. And again, I wholeheartedly agree with City Council members Grace Cramsey-Smith and Adam Waldron and the comments that they made earlier. So I mean, I'll leave it to everybody else to argue about what percentage is sufficient, but I honestly believe if you own a home and you live there a majority of the time, and again, I totally respect Mr. Simonson and how hard it is, and Ms. Heller and that department to manage it. I can't even imagine it, but I find it very difficult to tell a homeowner, if you're away for a week or 2 weeks on vacation, that you can't lease out your property for a short period of time. You are the homeowner. You're not using it as a majority of the time as a business. Like some of the people, I don't want to name any names, but we all know who we're talking about. There are people in the city who are buying homes, never living there, and just renting it out full time. That I'm totally against. But again, if someone was away for a week or 2 weeks or a month, you know, to Europe, and they want to lease out their property, that's progress, and it's the Airbnb, it's the Grubhub age that we're living in. And I think if we shot that down, I think we are falling behind as a progressive city. So. Thank you.
Mr. Clark?
Thank you. I just had one quick question, either for Ms. Heller or Mr. Simonson, just an example, just reading through some of the language, I, like most people have said, have used Airbnb when I travel. And going by the definition, page one of 9A here, an owner-occupied single-family dwelling, would it be permissible if, let's say I turned my house into a second-floor apartment and first-floor apartment, different addresses, you know, A on the first floor, B on the second floor, and wanted to occupy, and I used the second floor as my permanent residence, you know, lived here 100% of the time, so on, and used the first floor apartment as just a constant Airbnb, never rented it out for anything exceeding 30 days, because it's two different addresses, but yet I occupy, you know, it's one home that I've, you know, chopped up into two apartments. Is that permissible the way this is written?
No, it's not.
Okay. Because I, you know, just my own personal experiences, I've stayed most often have been a part of something like that, where the it started as a single family dwelling, which was then converted, where the homeowner or whoever owned, you know, lived full time in one apartment and then used the other one, and that way that kind of was you know, some resolution to something like this. I know someone had mentioned the idea of privacy. Was that scenario explored at all, or taken into account at all when writing this up?
It was discussed, and we really did try to be responsive to the neighbors and the neighborhood, and the concern, again, really is that then the property owner has less awareness of their visitors, their tenants, and when they're coming and going, and whether there's noise or other issues, and so that was still a concern. So we wrote it that it must be a single-family dwelling, which it could be a detached dwelling or a twin or a townhome, but it does need to be a single-family dwelling so that the space is then shared space, essentially. So that, again, was in response to the comments and the desires of the neighborhood.
Understood. Thank you for that clarification, Ms. Heller. And I would just agree with, I think it's council members Reynolds and Negron, who just the challenge of when you put these percentages in or day limitations and things like that, you know, who's going to be crossing out boxes on a calendar or verifying that? You know, if I'm the person who wants to, well, I see merit in it. I understand where Mr. Callahan or anyone's coming from in that. I just think it's spinning our wheels to a degree in terms of enforcement that now we're putting something on paper, which, not to say if it's impossible, but would be really challenging to verify, especially when, you know, certain parts of this now aren't even being followed as it's written, let alone how you're going to surveil that. So well, I think the intentions are good, and it does open up homeowners to be able to use their property better. I think if we want to discuss any kind of amendments, which I'm open to, if between now and the next meeting, or once someone had, I know Mr. Callahan kind of alluded to leaving it to other members of council to talk about that, which I'm open to have that conversation between now and any other meeting. The question, though, that I would have is, what's that magic number, and how does that make it easier to enforce what we have, which I think is the biggest question with all this. So that's my two cents. Thank you.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
This is the last time I'm talking, I promise. Okay, I'm just doing the math, and I definitely agree. I'm thinking enforcement is an issue, though, but I think enforcement is an issue no matter what percentage we have, no matter what. It's just a very difficult issue to enforce. My thoughts is this. I'd like to motion that we amend to 90, that the owner must be present 90% of the time. That gives them approximately 30 days, which is what we already have there. They cannot rent longer than 30 days. And that way, it gives the, we're giving the message that if someone does want to do an Airbnb in the city, they can have that opportunity to do so, and the owner can not be on site for a very small percentage of the time. So my motion is to amend the ordinance to owner be present 90% of the time.
Understood. We have to find out specifically where that language would go within this ordinance. And I just, before we dive into that, I did want to, if we could look at the first page of 9A, the final paragraph, 1302.1171.1, there is language in there that says that an owner-occupied single-family dwelling at which the owner allows a temporary rental of the dwelling unit or portion thereof for not more than 30 consecutive nights by a transient visitor. So, I mean, we already have language in there about 30, for not more than 30 consecutive nights. So, without making Ms. Cramsey Smith's potential amendment that she floated here of 90%, which is striving for that 30-day mark, is this still, this ordinance 9A in front of us, does it still allow for people to rent out their home for 30 days without the amendment? And that is either a question for Mr. Spurk, or Ms. Heller, or Mr. Simonson, I would say. And the answer to that could be, I don't know, but I think it's a question that should be answered before we make any potential amendments, because if I can understand Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Callahan's point, there should be a little bit of flexibility to allow people to have some, you know, sometime if they're going away for a week or two, and allow for maybe up to 30 days on a calendar year. But what does this change that's in front of us, 9A, what would it allow at this point? Because currently we have on the ordinance that people can rent out their home for 30 days, which Ms. Heller is nodding her head in agreement. So currently, that is our current situation, where people can rent out their home for 30 days in a year.
Yes, that's currently in the ordinance. Hasn't really been utilized, at least in a formal way. In the definition that you're referring to on page one, the 30 days refers to the longest period of time that any one visitor can stay at the Airbnb.
So those are consecutive days, essentially.
Correct.
So right. I guess, would, if we pass 9A as it is, where would our current ordinance that allows for 30 days, how would that be affected?
Well, we could just reinsert the language that's in the current ordinance. I'm not, I haven't really given that thought, so I'm not exactly sure where in the ordinance that would fit the most logically, but if we can do that, if you can, if you are comfortable doing that in a general way and just say that we would reinsert it, we can spend some time looking at that before your next meeting.
Was that taken out? Because at the copy of 9A that I have in front of me, that is not struck through, meaning we're not eliminating that language.
Well, 9A is a new ordinance. The language is actually in the old, or in, not in the old, the current 1741, which is 9B.
I do have that in front of us, and I think most or all council should as well, if we can try to find that.
Now, the copy that I have of 9B doesn't have underlines or strikeouts in it, though. So I'm not really sure why, but it doesn't clearly show what section that's in.
Yeah, Mr. Madoni said because this is a restated ordinance.
Oh, okay.
I'm skimming through it, and the number 30 is not popping out to me.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if you're comfortable with reinserting the older language, maybe a motion could just reflect that. We'll take it out of the housing ordinance and put it in the zoning amendment.
Mr. Klum?
Just for my own clarification, so I make sure I'm following along with how the language was in the previous ordinance. The 30 days were, so Ms. Heller, I understand what you're saying. Right now, the way this reads, 9A says longest anyone can rent an Airbnb is 30 days. Nothing to exceed 30 days. And in the previous ordinance, what exactly was that language as it relates to 30 days?
Mr.
So in the previous ordinance, there was two types of short-term lodging. There was weekend type, and then there was 30-day whole house rentals. And that's what was removed from the current 1741 and not brought into the new 1741, was the whole house rentals.
And then was that for a maximum of 30 days per
yes.
house per year?
Yes.
And then were there limitations on that? Like, was it weeks? Could it be up to 30 consecutive days at one time?
The whole house rental was up to 7 days, I believe. It was in the old 1741. You could rent your property up to 30 days throughout the calendar year. But if you did a whole house rental, you were allowed to rent it for 7 days. So there was like a type one and type two. But we didn't have anyone register for the second type with the whole house rental. We just had them register for the first type.
Would some kind of middle ground here with that, talking about reinstating that language of up to 30 days, can you just tighten the enforcement to where if it's not that it strictly needs to be registered, and if somebody does, because that would be, and again, you're the one, Mr. Simonson, who has to deal with the enforcement here, but kind of like a zero tolerance policy, or at least educate someone. Let's say my neighbor has his whole house rented out, and I call in a complaint that the whole house is rented out for the Airbnb, and there is no paperwork in your office that someone did this. Is that kind of like a way to police it better, where put that 30-day language back in there, which might solve some of what the conversation has been of giving people an opportunity, but it's... In terms of enforcement, if someone calls in a complaint, it's just a simple, you write it up because you say, hey, here's a copy of the ordinance. You need to make sure you're registering this every time you're renting out your house, and you're not going to be here. And then it's just a matter of educating that renter or them knowing that they're going to be subject to penalty if they don't call it in or register it with the city. And then once they get in the habit of compliance, that would make it an easier enforcement tool. Just look at how often it's been registered, and then it would still be sort of complaint driven. I don't know if I'm fully expressing myself here and how I think in my head I picture it being operationally a little bit easier, just being complaint driven and coming out, and it's either yes or no. The owner's either there or he isn't. If the owner isn't there, was it registered with your office, yes or no? And then if it was, okay, they're counting down their 30 days on the year. And if the answer is no, then you give them a warning or however you want to enforce that so that they're compliant more the next time. I think that would be, open to your commentary on that, but I think that's somewhat of a middle ground.
Yeah, the way the ordinance is written now, so it would be a year-long license. So if you were to rent the property for your 30 days consecutively, you wouldn't have to do anything above and beyond your original license fee. So there wouldn't be any way for us to check to say, did you rent it for for 31 consecutive days or for 32, because you don't have to register every 10 guest days. You have to keep a ledger, but... we view that upon inspection, so it's after the fact. So, it can be looked at. I mean, we can look at it if you're going to have an extended stay over a certain amount of time, you'd have to, and add that into your licensing or add some sort of supplemental registration for that. I mean, that's an option.
Thank you, Mr. Saunders.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, well, I think we're back to where we started with Ms. Cramsey Smith's potential amendment about 30 days. And what is the easiest, most eloquent way to do that? Does that go into 9A or does that go back into 9B to allow for that? And if it does go into 9A, does that trigger the necessary review by the two planning commissions?
May I comment briefly? It does trigger, in my opinion anyway, it does trigger starting the amendments, each of the amendments over again, at least 9A and 9C. And if those two have to start over, we would recommend that you not adopt 9B at this point because they're so interrelated, they need to be adopted together. I think because we've been spending so much time on this, and because it's been very much prolonged for a variety of reasons, we might request, and I think Grace did kind of note this at one point, that one option for you would be to adopt these as they are, and then if we have some consensus on what the amendment is that council really wants, then we can come back and provide an amendment to you. Probably we could do that in a couple of months. It takes a little while to get through the planning process, but we could do that, and then we would at least have something on the books by the end of this month. That would be a revision, and we could start over with those amendments. And then I think it would give council some time to really come to a consensus about what it is that you want to see, so that we come back to you with something that's really workable for all of you.
Mr. Reynolds?
I just want to say I agree with the sentiments of Ms. Heller. I think a lot of the ideas that have been brought up today, while they may have great merit, I'm just speaking for myself personally, is that I would want more time to consider them and consider all of their ramifications and the different enforcement. And I think that I would probably be in favor as well of passing them as is and then starting whatever process, because if we start whatever process now by the amendment, it's going to start the whole thing over anyway. So it's essentially you either get what's proposed now with the amendments to come afterwards, or you stop everything and then have to start the process over. And I think that I would agree with Ms. Heller that it makes the most sense to pass this and then let whatever, you know, council's wishes, whatever they are, let us share them or bring them forward and go from there. Thank you.
Understood. Any other comments from council? I would just kind of reiterate where I started my points. There's been a lot of conversation tonight about the neighborhood and that neighborhood, and really, I mean, everybody, we haven't said it, but everybody knows which neighborhood we're talking about. This ordinance doesn't apply to one neighborhood, it applies to our entire city. So when ordinances come forward that are for a very specific reason, but they affect an entire city, I think that is overreach. I think this goes too far, and I think it punishes people who are doing a good job of running out their homes. They are encouraging people to come to Bethlehem and spend their money and visit our town. And I think, at least for me, I will not be supporting this because I do not want to be a hypocrite and say that Airbnbs are not welcome in Bethlehem when I personally use them in other cities, in other towns where I visit. And I am a responsible guest in those homes. So I think that, well, I understand the reasons for this because there is a neighborhood with one perpetual bad actor who is not taking control of some of the problems on their property. I don't think that everyone in the entire city who is doing this responsibly should be punished, nor do I think people who want to visit our city and spend their money here should be told no, they are not allowed to come because Airbnb is not permitted because it's one person who's acting poorly. So I won't be supporting this evening, but I am willing to continue the conversation about a way that we can go after some of the problems that are happening regarding short-term rentals. Mr. Callahan?
I couldn't have said it any better, Mr. Waldron. I totally agree with you. So, you know, I think that's the way to go. So, thank you.
Again, this is first reading. Our second reading is scheduled for 2 weeks from today. And go ahead, Mr. Spurk.
Well, you do have an amendment, and hasn't had a second yet. So, I don't know if Ms. Cramsey Smith wants to withdraw her amendment or wants to proceed with it. If you get a second, and then you would have to have discussion on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr.
Before you had your vote.
Yes, Ms. Cramsey Smith, are you searching a second for that amendment that you proposed?
No, I'm willing to withdraw the amendment at this point. I am very torn because I do concur totally with what you said, Mr. Waldron. I do also feel like we need to get an ordinance on the book so we can try to enforce this as best we can, but I really want to do an amendment, so I'm not really sure my vote tonight, but I definitely am in favor of an amendment going forward with this ordinance.
Who's voting first?
Thank you.
Who's voting first? Mr. Callahan?
As I am also.
Understood. Well, the amendment has been withdrawn. Unless there's any other comments, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll. And Ms. Cramsey Smith, you may not be sure of your vote, but you're first to vote this evening, so I guess we'll all find out at the same time. If the clerk could call the roll on Ordinance 9A.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Oh. You voted on mute, so now we're even in more suspense.
Trying to keep you in suspense. Nay. My vote is nay.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Nay.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Nay. The ordinance fails 3-3. I also guess I should have added that with an ordinance we need 4 votes to pass. With only 6 of us, a 3-3 vote would fail. I don't know if anyone wants to have any additional discussion before we move to Ordinance 9B. Mr. Reynolds?
I would just ask about the practical effect of 9B and 9C without 9A. I guess that would be a question for Ms. Heller. So I guess I would ask that first.
I'm not sure what to say about 9B, honestly. I don't know that it makes sense to adopt the revisions for 9B. I don't know if Mike Clemson has any comment on that, but I don't know that it makes any sense to have a 9B. 9C, I would say, because it's just a definition for bed and breakfast, I think you could do that if you were still inclined to move that forward. It really just affects bed and breakfast.
9B, looking through it, it references the zoning ordinance, so without passing the zoning ordinance, we'd have to amend 9B in order for it to be effective anyway.
Mr. Waldron? I would then propose that we table both 9B and 9C.
Yeah, I think that would make sense because...
Until next meeting.
Right.
I would concur.
Yeah, we have... The other thing is, too, is if we vote no on this again, it kind of dies in perpetuity. If we table it, we have a few more options. So, is there any other comment before Mr. Reynolds makes his motion? Mr. Callahan?
I wholeheartedly agree. I think that's the way to go. Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
I would just say that I would make the motion. I think in hindsight, that if it was clear that it was going to be 3-3, we could have tabled 9A as well to let Dr. Van Hoort decide whether or not to be the fourth vote either way. But now that that option is no longer in front of us, I think that we should table 9B and 9C.
Motion and second to table. I don't know. It might make sense to do separately. I don't know. Mr. Sprague, doesn't matter. Okay. Table 9, ordinance 9B and 9C. Motion by Mr. Reynolds, second by Mr. Groen. So now we can discussion on that motion. Mr. Callahan, you wanted to add something?
No, we wouldn't have known what the vote was until we got here tonight. So unless, you know, we're making phone calls behind the scene, which, you know,
I don't know if that was Mr. Reynolds' implication. I think what he was saying was when we were having this discussion.
It wasn't my implication at all.
What we can say, I won't be supporting this tonight, as you and I did, Mr. Callahan. And then we can all do the simple math to decide that it was going to be 3-3. Although Ms. Cramsey Smith, I don't think knew how she was going to vote until she unmuted her microphone. So that was what we all found out.
May I remind you, this is not the motion to table. Is not debatable. There's no debate on the motion to table.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. If we can call the roll on the motion to table ordinance 9B and 9C.
Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 6-0. That's the last of our new ordinances this evening. It might be appropriate when we enter new business, we can talk a little bit more about how we want to proceed in regards to those ordinances. But at this point, we'll stay on our agenda and move to Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved that the Council of the City of Bethlehem, Northampton County, Pennsylvania, in accordance with the Municipal Records Manual, hereby authorizes the disposition of the public records held by the Law Bureau. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the authority of the City Council of the City of Bethlehem, Northampton County, and it is hereby resolved by the authority of the same that the mayor and the controller of said municipality be authorized and directed to sign all necessary grant documents for Highway Safety Project Police Traffic Services Grant Number PTS 2021, Bethlehem City 00050 on its behalf. Be it further resolved that the clerk of the City of Bethlehem is directed to execute a certificate attesting to the adoption of this resolution and furnish a copy of the resolution of the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Mr. Walder.
Discussion? Ms. Cramsey Smith?
I just have a question. I'm not sure if it will be directed to administration. I'm just wondering, is this 100% grant funded, or are there any matching funds necessary from the city?
Eric doesn't think that there's any matching funds.
No.
Mr. Evans, if the mic's running, we'll pick that up. Mr. Evans doesn't believe there's matching funds, and he said if there is, he would cover the cost.
Okay, thanks. I only ask because I know we've received some email and input from people who were against this, and because I think they're thinking it is city funds, so that's the only reason I ask. Thank you.
Mr. Cologne?
Thank you, President Waldron. Yeah, I'll be supporting this tonight. I know it's a grant which my interpretation was there's no city money being spent on these programs. I think there is, again, merit to, if we want to talk about how effective a DUI checkpoint and DUI roads are, you know, those are always good conversations to have. I'm not really in a position myself today to say that I want to take a stand against that policy. So given that, and given that these dollars have already been programmed by the state for this grant, and that we're simply applying to the monies that are out there for us and to help with enforcement, I'll be supporting this tonight. Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, I will be supporting this as well. I do think it's a general good question, but I would be curious about what outstanding offenses, et cetera, rise to the level of action during a DUI checkpoint. Obviously, there are some things that if somebody comes up as far as being wanted on some type of warrant for something, that the police would take action. But I would just be curious about what's the kind of protocol about that, as far as those. So maybe that's something that we could ask the chief in the future about. But I do think that's a legitimate question, is that other than catching people that are driving under the influence, or I would like to know what the standard is for what action is taken as far as, you know, outstanding warrants, et cetera, are concerned. Thank you.
Ms. Negron?
The little bit I know about it is that police will be mandated to check on anything else that might be wrong within that stop, including inspections or whatever else might be, seatbelts. But I think that, and I know the concerns about that can bring to members of our community. However, I also know, I mean, I looked through the report and it shows numbers of actual DUIs that come out of it, and fortunately are not too high, which is good. It's like not too many people are drinking and driving, right? But we know it's still happening, and we know that programs like MAD, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driver, have been very strong about making sure that there's education included in this, and there is. So these are opportunities for police officers to provide education about seatbelt wearing. You know, I work for a law firm with personal injury, and there's so many accidents that happen on a constant basis, people are not wearing their seatbelts. So, you know, if there are opportunities for the police officers to provide education to the community, I see that as a positive. However, that we have a lot of work to do in terms of that connection and the relationship again with police and members of our community, so it doesn't turn into something ugly. So I think that what I read in the report is that it's an opportunity for education, and I'm especially, you know, as a mother of three, and hearing so many stories from MAD, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, and the importance of the education of it, against it, and as well as seatbelt wearing. And I believe, according to the report, that is something that is happening at these checkpoints. I will be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe in my over 6 years on council, this is the first time we've had any public comment where people have called in asking us to not support a grant on any issue, public safety or otherwise. And I can understand the sentiment of why we've had a couple callers reach out to us about that. And I do take those concerns to heart, but at the same time, I do think this money is going to something that I think is a good cause. I think anytime you can enforce against DUI, and part of that comes through just letting people know that traffic stops are happening for that goal, as well as DUI checkpoints are happening, that kind of reminds people that they need to comply with laws. And it's become so much easier to not make that mistake by driving after drinking with the fact of ride sharing. And I think this is just a reminder that there's still work to go. And I think the city should continue to apply for whatever grants they're willing to get, whether that's the state, county, or local, federal level, pardon me. And I will be supporting this as well this evening. The clerk will please call the roll.
Mr. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 6-0. At this point, I will accept the motion and a second to consider resolutions 10C through 10G as a group and ask the clerk to call the roll on that motion.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Hold on, Mr. Cardone. I need a motion.
So,
motion by Mr. Callahan, second by Ms. Negron.
Okay, Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 6-0. The clerk would please read resolution 10-3 to 10-G.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature and Bethlehem ordinances are hereby granted for 733 East 4th Street to replace the roof, 325 Broadway to replace existing signage, 327 Broadway to install new signs, 327 Broadway to install new guardrail at rooftop locations, 327 Broadway to install metal panning cladding for new rooftop elements. These resolutions are sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Moving to new business, is there any new business for members of council? Mr. Cologne?
Thank you, President Waldron. Just a reminder to anyone who missed it, the Public Safety Committee will be meeting this a week from today at 6 p.m. virtually. Anyone listening at home, you can go on the city's website. I encourage anyone to look at some of the materials and support documents that are already listed on the website, along with in the instructions, whether streaming it through YouTube, as we've been doing traditionally through these meetings, or signing in as an audience member through the GoToWebinar, which is like Zoom or like Skype. And someone had asked me earlier about the formats, where you just follow the agenda like any other committee meeting, and then public comment will come at the end of the meeting. So after we've had a chance to listen to the agenda items, then public comment will follow at the very end of the meeting. Thank you.
And all the information on that can be found again on the city council's website, as far as getting access to the meeting online and what the instructions are for public comment. Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Thank you. I just want to acknowledge, I'm sure we all are aware, we've been receiving a lot of emails and input from people that are, there seems to be a lot of confusion and concerns about some members or all members of council wanting to eliminate the police department. And I think it's unfortunate because there's confusion regarding the term defund the police. And it's important that people are aware that defund the police does not by any means mean to eliminate the police or take all their funds away. It means to just look at possibly reallocating resources, especially so that we have more resources for the police in the areas of mental health and drug and alcohol and training. I've never myself have recommended taking funds away or eliminating the police, nor will I recommend eliminating the police. I have recommended and spoke with our police and mayor regarding looking at grants, especially trying to get secure grants for additional mental health specialists and drug and alcohol specialists that can help with the police. I think it's important that we look at the training. I'm a mental health professional with a master's degree, and I do counseling every day, but I still need to be trained in mental health on a very frequent basis. So obviously our police and emergency responders also can benefit from mental health training. I mean, that's just a given. I think there's a lot of confusion because the anti-abolition group condones eliminating the police. I don't support that. I have supported the ACAP way, and we talked about it, and our police chief and our department and administration have been gracious to assure that we change some of the language in our use of force policy so that we are in compliance with ACAP way, and I applaud them for that. I want it to be known, as I've said multiple times, and this is why I am really confused why people are trying to paint me as anti-police, that I grew up with a police chief. From the time before I was born until I was 21 when my father passed away, he was a police chief. So I lived every day and I saw the struggles and challenges that he endured. My nephew just retired as a state policeman in Pennsylvania. My other nephew was a city detective. And my other nephew was on the SWAT team with U.S. Capitol. So however anyone can say that I'm anti-police really just boggles my mind, because again, I have a personal investment in police, and I know personally the struggle that they endure every single day. I also want to note that I proposed a resolution months ago to assure that our police and emergency responders are covered for PTSD under the workers' comp law, because they previously were not, because someone that is hurt can just cause more hurt. So I think it's really important that be acknowledged. As far as the community engagement initiative, again, there just seems to be confusion regarding that. It is exactly what it states. It's a way to engage the community. So the community has a voice. And as far as, you know, what it's going to look like, we have not framed that. We have not sat down with the mayor and said, this is what it's going to look like. We said, we're going to have the public safety meeting, and we're going to get input from the community, and we're going to see what direction the community wants us to go as far as enhancing our relationship between the community and the police. Certainly, we have some ideas. I mean, in my mind, one of the ideas is I certainly want to get more supports for the police and look at the type and frequency of training that they have. And finally, I guess I applaud all the sides. I think it's important that we've heard from people that are pro-police, and we've heard from the Black Lives Matters and all the groups. That's what democracy is, everyone having a voice. I think it's unfortunate that there appears to be a scare-type campaign that paints some individuals or groups as wanting to get rid of the police just to scare certain populations. That is very unfortunate. It does nothing to help us as a community, as a country, and conversely, I think it's doing nothing but dividing us further, and it must be avoided. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cramsey Smith. Any other new business? I did mention that we would kind of turn back over to the short-term lodging ordinance 9A, B, and C. 9A was voted, went down 3-3. Any ordinance needs 4 votes to pass. And then ordinances 9B and 9C were tabled at this point until we have a plan of what we're going to do moving forward. If anyone else had anything they wanted to add or weigh into that conversation. Ms. Cramsey Smith?
I promise I'm not going to talk about that again. I just want to say before we end, I think that congratulations are in order for Mr. Reynolds and his wife Natalie on their recent marriage. Congratulations.
We can talk about it now that it happened. There's no chance to postpone again, but thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate everyone that reached out to us. As you can imagine, been a little bit of a stressful time, even though it was a very small affair. It was stressful, but I appreciate all of the well wishes, and thank you to Councilman Cramp Smith and everybody else that reached out. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
No, I had no idea. I also congratulate Mr. Reynolds and his bride. Congratulations and many years of happiness, so thank you.
Thank you.
Any other new business for members of council? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.
Have a great week, everybody.